You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
What does biology have to do with the financial crisis of 2008? Quite a lot, says John Coates, a neuroscientist at the University of Cambridge and a former trader at Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank. In his new book, The Hour Between Dog and Wolf, Risk-Taking, Gut Feelings, and the Biology of Boom and Bust, he explores the role biology and hormones in particular plays in taking risks and making big decisions under pressure. This book is published by the Penguin Press, and I'm very pleased that it has brought John Coates to our show today. Hello.
Hi there.
Now, you've called your book The Hour Between Dog and Wolf. Can you explain that?
Yeah, it's an old French expression dating back to about 1100, but it goes back in Latin to about 200 AD. And it refers to twilight, the time of day when you can't tell whether an animal coming out of the woods is a dog or a wolf. But it also has a darker meaning for them back then, because they still believed in transformation. And they thought it was a moment where a dog could actually transform into a wolf, or even a human transform from a tame creature into a dangerous one. And I thought that was a perfect expression to use as the title, because the book deals with the way our bodies affect the way we take risks, even financial risks, and it refers to the transformation that traders feel when they're on a winning streak and they turn from a tame creature into something a bit more dangerous.
What happens biologically when a trader shifts from dog to wolf?
Well, we're looking at the effect of the body more generally on risk-taking, because we think economics has ignored the body, that that subject is based on the idea that we're capable of pure rationality. So we're looking at the nervous system, we're looking at hormones. The first series of experiments we did were on what happens when traders become irrationally exuberant.
I know. Well, do traders feel that they need to become wolves to make money?
Well, I think what happens to them, because when I observed traders during the dot-com bubble, they were sort of changing. They were taking too much risk. The trades increasingly had worse and worse risk-reward trade-offs. And every blow-up I've ever seen at a bank, you know, a blow-up on the order of, you know, north of $500 million or $1 billion, they always occurred at the hands of a trader that the bank thought walked on water. He was at the tail end of, you know, a multi-month or a multi-year winning streak. So something was transforming them both during this bubble period of the dot-com and when traders individually are on a winning streak. Something transforms them from a dog to a wolf. And so we started looking at the effect of hormones, and particularly testosterone, on risk-taking.
Is that what happened in this recent incident at J.P. Morgan Chase?
It's possible. I don't know much about what happened at J.P. Morgan, so I can't really speculate on that particular case. I'd have to know the details of the positions, but it sort of seems to be a general phenomenon.
Well, in that case, they lost over $2 billion in a bad trade. But from reading your book, I get the sense that the body secretes increased amounts of cortisol when that sort of thing is happening.
Well, cortisol is the main hormone of the stress response. It really kicks in when things are going badly.
So that's what cortisol's that's what cortisol does in our bodies?
Yeah, it's sort of the main hormone of the stress response. So we're looking at, you know, in the book I'm trying to explain, because it's so underappreciated, the effect, just how physical risk-taking is, including financial risk-taking. When we take risks, you know, our heart rates accelerate, our blood pressure increases, our immune system is put on high alert. We don't regard information and opportunity the way a computer would. We react to it physically.
We call it a gut feeling.
There's that too. And in the book, I try and explain what this feels like to people who haven't been on a trading floor. And I do that through fictional traders who get caught up in a bubble and then a crash. And so we see first their behavior, which so people can understand what traders do, how they get into trouble. And then we go inside their bodies to describe both the physical reaction when they're irrationally exuberant, and then on the downside when things blow up, this stress response that you just mentioned.
Well, many people have pointed out that there are similarities between gambling and being a trader. In fact, many of the Wall Street traders also go to Atlantic City and do a lot of gambling. Is the process all that similar? The whole matter of the winner effect, for example?
I think it's yeah. I mean, I think you get kind of an addictive hit from any kind of betting, whether it's trading or gambling, that involves winning money when you're not certain you're going to win, so that when you win, you're really excited about it. The worlds are very different, though, because one thing you have to understand, on a trading floor, it's not just the money that causes your whole body to get involved. It's the amount of information flooding in there from every corner of the world. Nothing happens in the world that doesn't show up a few seconds later on the news screens. You're really at the nerve center. And that has a stimulating effect that you don't get in a casino, because there's no news coming into a casino.
But there's a lot of information overload if you're an athlete or a politician or you're a soldier.
Yep.
Is the effect similar there?
It is. In fact, you know, when we're talking about the universal biology of risk-taking, in the book when I talk about traders, you could substitute for the trader an athlete, a soldier, a politician, a lawyer. The biology of risk-taking is the same for each one.
Your research focuses primarily on young males who make up the majority of traders working on the floor. Is the biology of women and older males different?
Yeah, they have very different biologies from young males. Women have about a tenth of the testosterone as young males, and amongst males, your testosterone levels fall over the course of your life. So it's possible that women and older men are not as susceptible to the winner effect.
What about cortisol?
Women have the same amount of cortisol as men, and it's as volatile, but it reacts to slightly different events. It's not as tied to competitive stressors as men's.
Why aren't there more female and older male traders?
That's a good question.
Do men feel that they burn out? Is that why? Or they move up the chain? Or is this just a young man's game?
There's an enormous amount of impatience on a trading floor towards older men. They seem to, you know, if you don't buy into, you know, during the dot-com bubble, anybody who didn't buy into it was seen as, remember the expression from the time, they just don't get it. Like there was this new thing happening and, you know, everyone was wearing black polo necks and trying to think outside the box. But anybody who doesn't buy into these things, once they get going, you know, probably during the housing bubble, people who are slightly skeptical of it probably didn't get it. And quite often it's the older men who don't get it because they've seen a lot of other things. So there's a lot of impatience towards them on a trading floor.
So would the economy be in better shape if there were more female and older male traders?
Well, I actually do believe that the markets would be slightly more stable, yeah.
My guest is John Coates. His book, The Hour Between Dog and Wolf, Risk-Taking, Gut Feelings, and the Biology of Boom and Bust. It is published by Penguin Press. You argue that isolating groups of young men, such as on the trading floor, can be dangerous.
Well, I mean, I think whenever you isolate one part of the population, you might get extreme behavior.
Isn't that what we see at Google and places like that?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I mean, I was always impressed by this story of rogue elephants in South Africa that they've occasionally had problems, I don't know, because of culling herds or whatever. For whatever reason, these young male elephants go rampant, mm-hmm. and they trample villages and kill other animals. And they have to decide whether to put these animals down. They don't want to. And what they've started doing instead is, like, you know, sometimes by a Sikorsky helicopter, bringing in an elder male. And this elder male has the effect on the rogues of calming them down.
Well, at least the elephants don't throw spitballs at each other.
Yeah.
But the young guys do that kind of stuff. They throw around footballs a lot.
Yeah.
What is physiological toughness and how might it benefit traders?
That chapter, I think, is, to me, there's a chapter on physiological toughness and toughening regimes that can help toughen your physiology so that you're more immune to the ravages of exuberance, fatigue, and stress. It's not my research. It's other people's research. It's very cutting edge. There's not that much of it. But the little that does exist is absolutely fascinating because as we increasingly appreciate that the brain and the body work together as a single functioning unit, we realize that to be able to toughen our physiology requires more than just like a talking cure. It involves actually doing sort of physical training regimes. But it may have these physical training regimes might actually have the effect of making us emotionally more stable.
In Japan, we used to hear about how people would do exercise before the workday began. Is that a good idea? Should we all be doing some sit-ups before we start our workday?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're built to move. Basically, humans are built to move, so we better move. If we don't, bad things happen. But I think increasingly the mantra, you know, do exercise, can be made a lot more precise. And I think sports scientists can actually have a big role to play in worker health by tailoring those regimes. You know, it's not just do exercise, but what kind of exercise? Anabolic, anaerobic, you know, what kind?
Hasn't it been found that former Olympians and other athletes often make successful traders?
Yeah. I mean, when I was – most of the trading floors I was on, there were quite a few athletes there. And it sort of makes sense because I think they're drawing on the same physiology.
Well, athletes are often called hunch athletes, aren't they?
Well, that was a term that I came up just for the book because physiologists have discovered lately that gut feelings are real physiological entities. They're not just, you know – the stuff of legend, and some people seem to have them better than others, and so I refer to those people as hunch athletes.
I've read that we have a brain in our gut that's separate from the brain in our head.
Yeah. The enteric nervous system governs your gut from the stomach down through the intestines and the colon, and it's independent of the brain. It operates independently.
So what are the ways to become better hunch athletes?
Don't know. We're off the map here.
Before you became a neuroscientist, as we said, you ran a trading desk for Deutsche Bank and witnessed the dot-com bubble. What motivated you to make the big career change?
Stupidity. it struck me like a bolt of lightning that we had never actually looked at the effect of the body on risk-taking. And I knew from what I was feeling in myself and observing in others that even something that's supposedly as cerebral as trading derivatives was a profoundly physical activity. And I became convinced that we should be looking at it.
Well, if you decided to go back to Wall Street, would you be able to apply the things that you've learned in this research?
Oh, yeah. I think so.
And do you think that would make you a better trader?
Well, there's two things. One, I guess it would make me a better trader. But I think it would change. I don't think I would go back as a trader. I think I would go back as someone managing traders, and I think that would provide a real edge.
Well, you have a number of different hats. You're also, as we said, a neuroscientist, also an economist, and you're right. So when you think of yourself, if people ask you what you do, what's the first word that comes out?
Oh, but that's a really tough question. I don't know how to describe myself anymore. I honestly don't.
You could say I'm a dog or a wolf.
Yeah, I could. I'm somewhere in between.
John Coates, COATES, his book, The Hour Between Dog and Wolf, Risk-Taking, Gut Feelings, and the Biology of Boom and Bust. It's published by the Penguin Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.